This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be reacting to the news that Neil Warnock has left Cardiff. That news came out yesterday. Who is going to replace him? Should he really have been in charge at the start of this season, considering he knew this was going to be his final season in charge at Cardiff? So we'll be getting the Cardiff perspective very, very soon. We'll also be talking about table toppers West Brom, the most consistent of a very inconsistent bunch. We'll also be talking a little bit about Blackburn and Luton as the hour goes along. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon here on the Championship Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. As I mentioned, if you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558. We want to hear from you this afternoon. This hour, obviously, every weekday afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock is dedicated to all of the Championship fans out there. So make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Obviously, we're going to be starting with the big news story from the Championship. There's been already quite a lot of movement in the Championship management stakes. We kind of criticised the Premier League for making so many changes and managerial movement, the merry-go-round of managers so early on. But you look through the Championship table, Barnsley are on the lookout for a new manager. Stoke have replaced Nathan Jones with Michael O'Neill. Huddersfield have gone from Jan Sievert to Danny Cowley. Reading have gone from José Gomes to Mark Bowen. Millwall saw Neil Harris resign and Gary Rowett replace him. So plenty of changes already. Sheffield Wednesday have Gary Monk as their new manager. So plenty of changes have happened already in the Championship. And we had another managerial change yesterday, although we don't know who is the man to replace him. And it was the news that Neil Warnock has resigned as the Cardiff manager. Whether you say it was mutual consent or resignation, not quite sure on that. But the question also then is asked as to whether that is the end of Neil Warnock's 39-year managerial career. At 70 years old, he says it's time for the time is right for a new voice. Mehmet Dalman, the Cardiff chairman, revealed to The Telegraph, actually, that he left on his own terms, having said to executives that it was time for a change after they lost to Bristol City on Sunday in the Championship just before the international break. So we're going to be talking all things Cardiff now and get the perspective from a Cardiff fan on this news of Neil Warnock's resignation. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ben James, writer and founder of the View from the Ninian podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ben. So, as I mentioned, that news that came out yesterday evening that Neil Warnock has left, he's called time on his stint at Cardiff. Did that news come as a shock to you, or is it something that Cardiff fans had been expecting for a little while now?
I think the timing of the announcement came as a shock, although I don't think that him leaving came as a shock, if that makes sense. We knew he was leaving at the end of the season. We knew this was his last year. And the way that this season had been going, it kind of became obvious that maybe he wasn't going to last the whole season. The football hasn't been good. We've been inconsistent. It just looked like he was kind of on his way out. But I think that my expectation was that he would stick around for a little bit longer, maybe till Christmas, and a decision was made then. But as it were, he went yesterday. And I think it caught a few Cardiff fans by surprise, really. I think it's a bit of a sad day.
Warnock was in the final year of his contract at Cardiff and also had said after relegation from the Premier League in May that he would not carry on beyond the end of the season. I remember asking this question to you, Ben, about a month ago as to whether it was the right thing that he continued into this season, knowing that he wouldn't be there beyond this season. Also, there was a chance that something like this could have happened in terms of him stepping aside for someone else to come in. Obviously, we can now look back at it with hindsight, and now the decision has been made. But in your personal opinion, do you think he should have stepped aside at the start of the season, or do you think he has gained enough respect over the years and the job he's done at Cardiff to kind of leave on his own terms, as the chairman, Mel McDowell, said?
Yeah, I think hindsight in this is always 20/20. And I think there were a few people who raised concerns in the season start that, you know, it was kind of his victory lap and maybe his heart wouldn't be in it so much. But I was of the opinion, and I think, like you say, he carried enough weight at Cardiff after turning his club around when he took over 3 years ago, that he deserved that final year, really, to be given the chance to kind of maybe try and take us back up to have that final season and then move on from there. But I think it was quite clear from early on, really, that there was something amiss with this team. We signed a few players in the summer, but maybe some of those new players hadn't bedded in. We haven't seen some of those new players at all, and there was kind of a malaise around the club. And I think it was only fair that we allowed him to leave on his own terms. And I think the general kind of feeling was that if Dalman had his way, Warnock would have carried on till Christmas. But I think, in reality, it's the right thing that Warnock's moved on as he has done now.
It's interesting you pick up on that point, Ben, about how maybe the club wanted him to stay, but he felt like it was the time for a new voice. He's talked quite a lot, really, all through the year about how it's been the toughest year of his management. It all started off, obviously, at the beginning of this year with the tragic events, obviously, surrounding the death of Emiliano Sala, and he said how that was kind of the toughest couple of weeks he'd ever experienced in his managerial career. It feels like, and then obviously there was on the field the lack of VAR and the controversies with refereeing decisions towards the end of the Premier League season last season. Do you think that the main reason why Warnock has stepped aside is it's just been so draining on and off the field that it gets to a point where Neil Warnock's, number one, he's a human, and two, he's 70 years old, and these things do take their tolls on managers?
Yeah, I think so. I think I remember the game after Salah went missing. We were away at Arsenal, and there was a moment at the end of the game where Warnock came over to kind of greet the away fans and, you know, applaud us for the kind of support we'd given him and the club. And he just looked like he was a broken man. And I think it's taken a lot for him to recover from that. And then I think that the kick in the teeth at Chelsea, when, you know, we were basically cheated out of kind of staying up, if you will. And I think it's just, like you say, he's 70 years old. He's kind of mellowed slightly in his older age. He's less kind of angry as he once was. And I think we've got a lot to be thankful for. And I think it is just time that he moved on, really. Like you say, 70 years old. He can retire happy now.
It's interesting you pick up on how he will be remembered. What will be the lasting impact? Because reading in some of the reports today about how he'd been convinced by his wife to continue at Cardiff for another season, how she's obviously gone through some very personal issues, coming through cancer, and is now in remission, which is fantastic, and how the fans are often chanting her name, getting behind him personally as well as a manager. How big an impact will he leave at this club? Because it seems from the outside looking in like he has made a massive difference, and the fans loved him. And also he talks about how his family have really kind of grown to love the club of Cardiff.
Yeah, I think when he came in, it's easy to forget the state of the club that when he came in, we'd gone through the red kit debacle with Tan, then we had Solskjaer come in, Slade came in, and the club was really in the doldrums when he took over. We were in the relegation zone by some way. We were kind of struggling under Paul Trollope, and the club was kind of just wasn't the same as it once was. And I think, you know, when a lot of people this summer will criticise Warnock for his transfer dealings, but I think his impact at the club goes a lot further than just what happens on the pitch and the players he's brought in. It goes into the crowd, it goes into the kind of support he's received, and I think he's united the club in a way that no one could have imagined. And he's brought us back from, you know, the edge of kind of a lot of fans walking away from the club because it just wasn't the same as it once was. And he's given us something to believe in again. And I think, like you say, his family, you know, he's gone through a lot with his wife who's been ill, and she always encouraged him to go back into management. And I'm really glad that he was able to come back into a club like ours and leave an impact that isn't just measured in football results and transfers. It's measured in how he made the club feel again. And he really did just give us that something to believe in, which we didn't have for a while. And I, you know, that's all we can be thankful for, really.
The obvious question now, Ben, turns to who will replace him. And in the media today, lots of different rumours flying around, the odds on different people. Mm-hmm. At the top of those odds, the likes of Neil Harris, who's recently resigned from Millwall. Lee Bowyer, who's doing a good job at Charlton. Michael Flynn, who's been doing a good job further down the pyramid at Newport County. One report in the Times today suggesting Cardiff are eyeing up Chris Hughton, who stood out of a job having left Brighton at the end of last season. Hughton's name is the one that always seems to pop up with these championship vacancies. That's one that I'm looking at and thinking that's a possibility. I suppose one, who would you personally like to see come in? Two, maybe if it's a bit too unrealistic, who do you think is the most likely option to come in?
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone mentions Hughton, but I think the kind of way it ended for him at Brighton, he kind of taken them down the road that we've ended up at now. The football wasn't working anymore. He didn't really have any tactical flexibility. And that kind of led to his sacking at Brighton. If I had the choice, I would go for Gareth Ainsworth. I liked him when he played at Cardiff for 6 months. I think he's done a brilliant job at Wickham. And he's always kind of improved year on year, or he's built something there that I think is, you know, he's going to leave a legacy there beyond his years when he does choose to move on. As it stands, it looks like the clear favourite is Neil Harris. I think the odds have shortened on him dramatically. The talk around the club is that the talks are ongoing and that he's going to be the man that the club want in there. And I think while it isn't the most inspiring of kind of managerial signings, I think there's some good that can come of it. If he comes in and makes us hard to beat like he has done at Millwall, then that's something that we need to go back to basics with this season. I think if we bring him in and we're also bringing a director of football, which is something that Mehmet Dalman has mentioned, then I think we're starting to build something at the club that fans want, which is that legacy, that is that kind of holistic view across the football club about, you know, football itself, because we really don't have any kind of football men on the board, if you will. And I think it's only really a matter of time before Harris does get announced. And I think that might be disappointing for the wider fan base. But I think if he can come in, make us hard to beat and kind of push on in the second half of the season, as he did with Millwall when they almost got into the playoffs a couple of seasons ago, then I think it could be a good appointment.
It seems, Ben, like it's not a bad time to actually be going through this process. From some reports I was reading, the club wanted him to stay until Christmas, but actually ahead of a very busy period coming up in December in particular, it seems like now is an opportune time in this international break. They've got a little bit of time. Do you think that Cardiff will want to get the new manager in quickly? And what I mean by that is kind of over the next few days, the next 48 hours. Or do you think they'll look to use this time where there isn't another game for 10 days to actually be meticulous, be careful, and actually take a little bit longer to make this appointment so that they make the right appointment going forward?
It sounds like the club has kind of been working on this in the background for a little longer than just the last couple of days. I think when Sol Bamba was on Sky, I think it was yesterday, he basically said that the club had already spoken to a few people, which suggests that it's someone who might be out of work, which would fit the bill with Neil Harris. And I think the club, the noises that are coming from Mehmet Dalman says that he wants to make the appointment within the next 72 hours. So, you know, by Thursday, by Friday, we could be looking at a new manager in place. I don't know how many players from our squad are going away for international duty. I think we've only got Will Box away at the moment, who's a Welsh international. Everyone else, I think, should stay around. So I think if we can get a manager in before Friday, get the players back to some training, because I know they tend to have a couple of days off at the start of international break, and Harris can, or whoever the manager is, can start bedding in his ideas, then I think that's, you know, that's something that we need to view as a positive, really. If they think they've got the right man, then we have to trust the club on that. And if that is Harris and he comes in over the next 3 days, then he's given himself a fighting chance over the rest of the international break to kind of get down to the players, get them working hard in training and getting his ideas across to them.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ben. That was Ben James, writer and founder of View from the Ninny. And obviously, in light of that news that Neil Warnock resigned yesterday, obviously it made sense to get someone like Ben from the Cardiff perspective on today to give his reaction. It seems like he was a man that really took to the fans, someone who'd brought the club and the fans together, which you think back to those days of Vincent Tan and Malky Mackay as the owner-manager. It couldn't have been a worse situation for them. Mehmet Dalman has said, the chairman, that they're looking for a younger, more offensive type of manager. Plenty of names have been linked, from Neil Harris to Chris Hughton to Lee Bowyer to Michael Flynn. If it were up to Ben, he suggests Gareth Ainsworth from Wickham would potentially be his choice. as the new manager. Who, Cardiff fans out there, who would be your choice? Who do you think should replace Neil Warnock now that he has left Cardiff? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Plenty more still to come in the hour. We're going to be talking about Blackburn and Luton a little bit later. But up next, we'll be talking all things table toppers, West Brom.
Love Sport.
So, looking at the Championship table as it stands. So, at the top, West Brom, after 16 games, are top 33 points. Perhaps the most consistent of an inconsistent bunch. How many times are we going to say that of West Brom? Preston are second on 31 points, also on the same number of points are Leeds United. The other three sides in the current playoff position, Swansea City on 29 points, Nottingham Forest on 28, and Bristol City also on 28, just hanging outside Fulham, Sheffield Wednesday, Brentford and QPR. Down near the bottom, it's Barnsley, who are bottom of the table without a win in a very, very long time since the opening weekend against Fulham. Quite a long time to wait for a win. Stoke are second bottom, but they are off the bottom after that win in Mike O'Neill's first game. Middlesbrough also down there. Luton and Wigan hovering just above the relegation zone. We'll get the Luton perspective later in the hour after four straight defeats. But as I mentioned, right at the top are West Brom under Slaven Bilic. 9 wins, 6 draws and just the one loss for them in their opening 16 games. And to talk all things the Baggies, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Joe Chapman, West Brom reporter for the Birmingham Mail and Birmingham Live. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Joe. It seems, as I said, we've been talking about how the Championship has been marred really by inconsistency. So many teams winning, then losing, then winning, then losing. Is it fair to say West Brom in particular, seeing just one loss to their name after 16 games, they have been the most consistent of what's been a very inconsistent Championship?
I think so. I think it says a hell of a lot about the Championship that they haven't pulled away, actually. Perhaps there have been a couple of draws where they would have liked to have won, but crucially those games have been points where otherwise, especially at the start of the season, they might have lost games at Fulham and Derby County spring to mind, where they were one goal down going into the final few minutes of games and they've come away with a point. And that stood them in good stead. It's given them a bit of a platform to have then go and have a run where they've managed to turn those draws into wins later on in the season. And this particular batch of games, which Slaven Bilic was talking about after the win at Hull on Saturday, since the last international break, they've won 3 and drawn 2. And, you know, there have been wins away from home where beforehand they were struggling to see off teams on the road and beating teams at home. And now it seems to be the other way around, where teams are actually going to the Hawthorns, scoring goals, getting the odd point here and there. But Albion have been very, very solid on the road. And they've taken, I think it's 3 wins in a row on the road. They've certainly kept a lot of clean sheets on the road as well.
Last weekend, then, it was another win for West Brom. They beat Hull by 1-0. Jake Livermore scored the goal that gave West Brom the win against his former side. He didn't celebrate. What's your view on former players not celebrating against former teams? Because some would say that it's showing respect to a former side. On the other hand, some might say it's disrespectful to your current employers by not celebrating a winner in a game. What's your view on Livermore not celebrating against one of his former clubs?
Well, I think, first of all, if it had been me that had scored that goal from 25 yards, I'd have struggled to have kept my emotions in check, to be honest. It's a fantastic goal. He did, I think it's pretty important to point out, he had a great time at Hull. That's something that is quite clear. He was obviously going through a difficult point in his personal life during that time at Hull as well, and they as a club helped him through that. And I think that was something that was probably in his mind at that point as well. He got a really, really warm reception when his name was read out before the game started. And I think he just generally has fond memories of it. And I don't think, especially as he's doing the business, he's putting the ball in the back of the net in the first place. I don't think there were that many West Brom fans in the away end that were all too offended or actually minded it, to be honest with you. I think it says more about Livermore as a person and as a character. Bilic was absolutely raving about him after the game. He said it was a privilege to have him as a captain. He's the kind of person you want at the club, not just as a player, and the performances he's put in this season as a captain, but also just around the place. He's a really, really good individual to have.
Looking then at the season as a whole so far, first 16 games, obviously it's a difficult question just to pick out kind of one player. Who for you, Joe, would be the standout player? That there are a few that I'm thinking you might suggest, having spoken to you and a few other West Brom people over the last few weeks and months. And if you had to pick out a disappointing player, which can be difficult when you're top of the table, but if there was one player that was perhaps slightly underperforming or an area where West Brom need to improve, where would you say that would be?
Well, I think, first of all, in terms of the players, there's a whole host of players. If you're top of the league and you've won 9 of your first 16 games, then it's going to be very difficult to kind of pick one player out. There have been so many going forwards. Livermore is one who has been transformed under Bilic. I think that's really important to point out, as has Carl Bartley at the back. The new signings that have come in create a new spine, really. Shemi Ajayi, Romain Sawyers, and Mateus Pereira and Grady Diangana in the final third have all been absolutely outstanding. All play key parts each week to ensure that Albion are towards the top end of the table. As regards to the other way, perhaps, I mean, certainly an area that it sounds an odd one, actually, but probably up front, considering Albion have had such success with their goal rate this season, I think only Preston have scored more. And the fact that they are top of the league, they are actually missing like an absolute killer striker. Charlie Austin has only managed to get one league goal this season. Kenneth Zahor arrived in the summer and he was £8 million worth from Cardiff City, and he's only got a couple, and they've both been from the penalty spot, and they were both in the month of August, so it's been a little while for him. I suppose Hal Robson-Kanu has helped to kind of cushion that recently, because he scored a few goals from the bench, and he's now, out of those three forwards at the Cup, he's the top scorer now. But I suppose if you're going through to January and you're looking at the season over a 46-game haul, I think Albion probably do need a player who's going to be able to score the best part of 20 goals. And obviously, people are still hoping that might be Austin, who's still Bilic's first choice centre-forward. But as the weeks go on, everybody's, you know, kind of carrying the burden of goals at the minute, whether they've been midfielders or defenders or attackers. So it's not been too much of a problem just yet, but I think going forward, they'll know that probably over the course of 46 games up until May, Albion are going to need that cutting edge in the final third.
So do you think, Joe, that I was going to ask about the January transfer window, because most people ask when a team's near the bottom of the table where you need to reinforce and where you need to spend money. But even though West Brom are in a good position, do you therefore think it's important that they don't rest on their laurels, that they go and strengthen again? Obviously, buying the right players and being very careful in the way in which you go about your business in January, but actually saying if there are players there, we're not just going to refrain from doing it because we're top of the table. Actually, we're going to go and strengthen again, use this window to get even better and strengthen our position at the top.
I think so, yeah. I would kind of reinforce the idea that Albion don't need wholesale changes. They really are. They're fantastic unit to watch at the moment. I think it's just like little tweaks here and there, and if they can find something that can just provide them with that extra killer instinct in the final third in the form of one player as opposed to a burden that's having to be shared around the entire pitch, then I think that would probably see them over the line at this point, because they've looked so good in every other department. Of course, a lot will depend on Grady Diangana as well. I know Manuel Pellegrini said just the other day that he was hoping to keep Dean Garner at West Brom for the entire season. But of course, as weeks go by and West Ham's form deteriorates, and Manuel Lanzini's obviously got himself injured over the weekend, and things like this just bring that kind of back into focus. So obviously there are no guarantees. Their hope is that West Brom will still have Grady Dean Garner by the end of January. But in the worst case scenario, and he is recalled by West Ham, then of course he'll need to be suitably replaced as well.
Is the biggest frustration for West Brom fans at the moment the fact that they have been the most consistent side and they've only lost one game all season, and yet they're only 2 points clear at the top, they're only 5 points clear ahead of Bristol City and sixth, that despite the fact that West Brom have been one of probably the only consistent side over these first 16 games, they don't have a bigger lead than they currently have?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was looking at the table myself, just obviously they beat Stoke on Monday. It was a really quick turnaround of games. They went up to Hull, put two wins back to back on the road within the space of 6 days, two clean sheets, all very impressive. And then you look at the table and you think, actually, it's still really close, because they're only doing what Leeds were doing, what Swansea were doing, what Preston have been doing, in recent weeks and picking up results as well. And, you know, you have to go down quite a way down the table to find a real drop-off before you look at Albion's place in the table as being, you know, particularly secure. So it is, it's just the nature of the Championship. I think that's something that Slaven Bilic, despite his relatively limited experience of the division, was fully aware of anyway before he got there. He knows they've achieved absolutely nothing at this point. It's lovely being the top of the league in the middle of November when you've reached the third kind of checkpoint of an international break. But it will mean absolutely nothing if they're kind of nowhere near there come May. So that's something that he knows will absolutely just be drilled into the players, I think, between now and especially over the Christmas break, you know, with the fixture list piles up. And the kind of the squad depth gets tested. All these things will come into play, but at the moment, all they can do is keep getting results, and they have been. You know, since that Leeds game, I think they're probably about another six or seven games unbeaten. So they responded really, really well to that defeat, their sole defeat that was back in October. And I think that they're standing themselves in very, very good stead for the long term.
And just finally, Joe, looking at the next four games, this is a big test for the table toppers. They're at home against Sheffield Wednesday, home against Bristol City, away at Preston, home against Swansea. Those sides all also in the top six. The only sides that they don't face, Sheffield Wednesday are in eighth, but you've got Preston in second, Swansea fourth, Bristol City sixth. This is going to be a big test, but I suppose crucially, three of those four are at home.
Yeah, I think so. They come thick and fast at you now. From now on, I suppose it's the last break where Slaven Bilic and his coaching staff have been able to use these international breaks really effectively and kind of review these batches of fixtures in a row. Now it's kind of one big run until March, I think it is, which is the next one. So they come at you thick and fast. So they've obviously got the Sheffield Wednesday game as you say on the Saturday, and then there's a quick turnaround where I think they play. I think they play Wednesday and then Monday and then the following Sunday. So the fixtures are all over the place, but the quality of opposition is absolutely undoubted. The big challenge that Bilic will have against Sheffield Wednesday on that first game back will be the midfield after Romain Soyuz and Jake Livermore both picked up their fifth yellow cards of the season against Hull. So both of those players are suspended for that game, which is their entire midfield. So they're going to have to kind of come up with some kind of solution to replace them as effectively as they can. They've got Gareth Barry back in the fold. They've got Chris Brunt, Rakeem Harper and Filip Krivinovic to call on. So there's options there, but that's for the run that you mentioned there, that it's not probably the most ideal of starts going into that.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Joe. That was Joe Chapman, West Brom reporter for the Birmingham Mail and Birmingham Live. Pretty decent start for West Brom. They have been pretty consistent. Just one defeat in their first 16 games. Top of the table on 33 points. 2 points clear of both Preston and Leeds. But a pretty tough run coming up after the international break. Three of them are at home. At home against Sheffield Wednesday. Home against Bristol City. Away at Preston. And at home against Swansea. So a test for Slaven Bilic's side when we return from the international break. Coming up, we're all going to be talking about Luton later in the hour, but up next, we'll be talking all things Blackburn.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in touch with us this afternoon. Obviously, we're going to continue talking all things Championship. We're going to be talking about Luton in a little bit. They slipped to their fourth defeat on the trot at the weekend against Reading. Things looking a little bit awful, let's just say that, for Graham Jones's side. They're very much on the slide at the moment, but we're going to be talking all things Blackburn now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Andy Watson, writer and presenter of the Stat Show for Rovers Chat. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. Looking back at last weekend, it was a 2-1 away defeat at Leeds. Obviously, any fan is disappointed with the defeat, wherever it is, but against a side of the quality of Leeds, who are up in third away from home, was it that perhaps a surprising a result?
No, it wasn't a surprising result. I'm sure even the die-hard Rovers fans that were there at Elland Road were kind of half expecting what happened. But, you know, it wasn't a terrible performance. I think we all started to fear the worst when Leeds went 2-0 up just before half-time. And it looked like the floodgates might even open a little bit, even though it had been quite finely balanced at 0-0. But thankfully, we got the goal from Derek Williams just before half-time ourselves. And that seemed to galvanise us for the second half display, which at least we didn't concede any more goals. And it was pleasing to see some fight from the lads. And defensively, we weren't too bad. I just felt that attacking-wise, we still didn't threaten the opponent's goal enough. And that's really been a common theme for our start to the season.
It was interesting, Annie, to read some of the comments from manager Tony Mowbray after the game. He wasn't happy with the standard of refereeing in that defeat to Leeds, and also asking the question in general in the Championship whether the standard is getting worse. Do you feel like Blackburn were hard done by on the weekend, and also in a wider sense in the league, do you think that the quality, I mean, you look at the Premier League at the moment, it's all over the place with the refereeing. Do you think in the Championship there are similar refereeing problems?
I'm not a massive one to bash referees in general. I've done a refereeing course myself, and I know how difficult it is to do the job. But, you know, I have to say, being there, I was probably about 50 yards, away, well, maybe even 20 yards away from where the penalty was given, just that it was at our away end there, and it looked ridiculously soft at the time. And having seen it back, I fair enough that Tosin Adarabayo didn't get the ball, and I don't understand what he did, but it certainly didn't seem to be enough to warrant a penalty to me. But in general, I do think the standard of refereeing is starting to slip. There's not that, I can't see exactly what we can do to fix that straight away. It's got to be a long process of developing referees, maybe in a different way, or maybe entrusting younger people with the whistle earlier, because you've got to keep up with the play. And we all know that the play is getting quicker and quicker because the players are getting fitter and the demands on the game are getting higher. So maybe I know that they have a fast track system, but maybe we should be bringing more people in through that. But it's a difficult one to try and solve straight away, I think.
One thing that's been apparent for Blackburn this season are the injuries defensively that Tony Mowbray has had to deal with. A number of players who've been out for a little while, players that are gradually being eased back in. How do you think Tony Mowbray, considering we're out of a transfer window, he can't, unless they're free agents, can't sign anyone, can't loan anyone at the moment. How do you think he is coping with the defensive injuries? How are Blackburn looking in a defensive shape at the moment?
Well, our defensive record last season was quite poor, and that was the thing that kind of kept us in the bottom half of the table by the end of the season. And not a lot has changed, despite Tony Mowbray saying in June at the start of the break that he knew that was the area that needed help with. He knew that it wasn't good enough, and that the defenders that were there were going to be shipped out if they didn't improve. So our business over the summer was keenly looked at by all the fans, and it's an interesting situation because we brought in Christian Walton to replace David Raya, but on loan. We brought in Tosin Adarabayo on loan. We brought in Greg Cunningham on loan. So he actually hasn't brought in anybody to plug the holes that were there last season. Having said that, Derek Williams has been excellent at centre-half so far this season. He started to get a little bit found out last couple of games when he played there, and he's reverted to left back now, obviously because Greg Cunningham's got a long-term injury and we won't be seeing him for the rest of the season. Having been there on Sunday, it was the first time that I really got to see Tosin really close up, and I thought he was excellent despite the penalty. He's a very good reader of the game, excellent at stepping out from defence, but we haven't been playing through the thirds as much as we should have been. We've been playing a little bit more direct, which again was the opposite of what Mowbray said that he wanted to do at the in the summer. So it's been a confusing one. We've got Nyambe currently playing central defence, which I actually think could be a long-term good position for him. And then our captain, Elliot Bennett, is played every game this season and mainly at right-back. And the defence actually held its own, I think, on Saturday against a very, very good Leeds team, which obviously are going to be right up there all season. So it was good to see that, but it is still going to be a long-term issue going forward for the rest of the season, because like you say, there's not that much, there's certainly nothing you can do right now other than coach, and being a ex-Premier League centre-half himself and obviously had a very long career in that position, you think he'd be able to do something with it, but it's just something that doesn't seem to be improving. And obviously, getting Daryl Lenihan back in the team as soon as possible would be a massive help towards that, because I really rate him as a player and as a leader. But maybe we'll see in January if we can bring in another cover. Maybe I don't think there's going to be very much budget there, but he should be looking to maybe get in a new left-back, since we can't see Greg Cunningham coming back for the rest of the season.
I was going to ask you about that, Andy, in terms of January transfer window business. Already in November, we asked the question of what clubs might do what business. Do you think that Tony Mowbray will be looking for new signings? And I suppose a more important question, will he have the funds available to him if he wants to do any business?
Well, obviously a lot of fans have stayed away from Ewood Park since Venky's took over, and we had a very turbulent 3 or 4 years when they first took over. However, you've got to say that they are making a loss on this club. They're putting in hundreds of thousands of pounds a week to keep us afloat at the moment, and if they pulled the plug on that, then we would be in serious trouble. So you have to commend them for putting up the money for the likes of Sam Gallagher, for the likes of Ben Brereton in the last couple of seasons. But I question whether that money has been very well spent, because those two players that I've mentioned there, £12 million of transfer fees spent on them, and yet we're still looking not a threat going forward. Brereton obviously hasn't kicked on. He's just coming back from injury now. He's played a couple of under-23 matches. So maybe he'll be a factor coming in November and December. I don't know if they're going to be able to put up another budget in January that's going to enable us to be able to attract players that are going to improve the situation for us. We maybe get one or two, but it might be a case of someone has to go out before we can bring anybody in. And I know that a lot of the players that we brought in the summer, even if they were on a free, like Johnson and Downing, they've become automatically one of the highest earners in the club. And it's the wage bill, combined with the lack of people going down to Ewood, it's quite a low attendance at the moment that's really making our financial situation so precarious. If he is going to be looking to bring someone in, it's going to be both ends of the pitch. We look okay in midfield. We've got quite a good balance in there, and a couple of good youth prospects as well. John Buckley scoring his first goal the other week. But it's going to be plugging the gaps at the back, but also trying to find a way to score a few more goals, to create better chances to score more goals.
And just finally then, Andy, do you think Tony Mowbray's under any real pressure for his job? Blackburn are currently 18th on 18 points after 16 games. Do you think that he should be looking over his shoulder, or do you think that the club should give him their full backing?
I'm sure that the club do give him the full backing. I don't actually think he is under pressure for his job at the moment. The feedback that we get through the website and through the YouTube videos that I've been doing and the stats show that there is quite a significant number of people that are seriously questioning Mowbray's future at the club, but that's still, I think, small pockets, although very vocal on social media. I think the club will stick by him definitely till Christmas. I would be surprised if he was, as long as we weren't in serious trouble of relegation, like I say, 5 points away from it at the moment, I think. And as long as we didn't go up too much closer or get into the relegation zone, I can't see him being removed for compensation reasons as much as anything else. And also, you look around and who is there to do a better job? He's done well to consolidate the club. He's always talked about a long-term project and building the infrastructure around the club. And we can all see as fans that has happened and it has improved from the days under Steve Keane and under Owen Coyle. And there's still a good feel-good factor, I think, around the squad. You can see there's still togetherness there. So there's not all the danger warning signs that you look for a manager severely under pressure. And for those reasons, I think he's good to keep going at the moment, but there are serious concerns that we need to start addressing on the pitch.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. That was Andy Watson, writer and presenter of The Stats Show for Rovers Chat. The belief that at the moment Mowbray's not necessarily under a huge amount of pressure, but that could grow if Blackburn slip further and further towards the relegation zone. It sounds like even if Tony Mowbray would like to do a lot of business. He won't necessarily have a lot of funds at his disposal. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon here on the Championship Fan Show, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Luton.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch, obviously this hour is dedicated to all of the 24 Championship clubs. Get in contact with us. Call us on 0208 7020 558. We are available on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. You can also WhatsApp us on that very same number if you want to get in contact with us and share your views on your Championship club, whether you're ecstatic being right near the top or pretty deflated being rooted near the bottom of the table. We're going to be talking all things Luton now. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by James Cunliffe, editor of thelutonian.com. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, James. Not exactly the greatest result to head into the international break for your team. A 3-0 defeat away at Reading, which means it's a fourth straight defeat for Graham Jones's side. A pretty comprehensive defeat on the weekend and not a lot of positivity going into the international break, I assume.
No, you're absolutely right there. It was probably the most dire performance of the season, and they've lost a lot of games, but the performances have been quite good in most of them, and there's things you could point to for positivity, but I'm afraid Saturday was pretty dire. They were not bad for the first 15-20 minutes, but then the first goal went in, heads went down, and they never ever looked like getting back in it, into it after that. They didn't even have a shot on target in the second half, which really speaks volumes.
After the game, and obviously, you'd expect this from a manager that's just lost 3-0, but Graham Jones was quite clearly not happy with the performance as much as the result. He believed his side were outclassed, outplayed and outfought. Brutally honest assessment, but is that a bit concerning for Luton fans that, I mean, ultimately on a day you can be outplayed? That's fine and potentially outclassed, but the outfought bit is a bit that if it were my club, I wouldn't be happy to hear the players just got outfought, that they were outrun, they were just done on energy and the amount of commitment you have towards a game. That must be something that's a bit of a worrying sign that the manager is so honest in that sense, as well as just the I suppose the talent on show as well.
Yeah, but it was a fair and honest assessment. To be honest, there was no fight in the second half, and you know, they barely got even into Reading's half, let alone had a sight on goal. I suppose the concerning thing is that Reading were one of the teams in and around them. I kind of thought it was a must not lose game before the game. You know, you can stomach losing to the top six, perhaps, but. The teams in and around you've got to try and pick up points against, even if it's just, you know, a gritty draw somewhere along the line. So, it was worrying, and he's been fairly honest and fairly straightforward since he's been at the club, and that was just that.
What's your view, James, on where Luton are up to at the moment? Because it is, as I mentioned, four straight defeats now, hovering just one place and one point above the relegation zone on 14 points at the 16-game mark. Are you concerned that this is a trend that is starting to really emerge and Luton are going to continue this form, or is it a case of still 30 games in the season, plenty of time to start turning things around, and the way that the Championship has gone, there have been so many inconsistent sides that things can turn around very quickly?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a little bit of both. Yeah, there is a long way to go. Can't not be concerned, but I mean, it's kind of relative really, because where they are at the moment, if you offered that at the end of the season to any Luton supporter, I think the board, the manager, they all expect that's success if they finish one place above relegation. So you have to kind of take those things into account. They've come up two divisions in a row. They don't have a big budget. They got loads of players in summer, but they were, bar one of them, bar the goalie, they were all free transfers. So you have to look at it like that when you're playing teams like Nottingham Forest. You've got Leeds coming up the next game. Their budgets are far, far bigger. They're also established Championship teams. Luton haven't been in that division for 12 years. So it's kind of an adjustment period, really. So it is kind of relative. I think if you assessed it fairly, then you'd have to say if they were going to finish one place above relegation, then they're going to lose a hell of a lot of games. So they are where they are at the moment. I don't expect they're going to get anything from Leeds after the international break, but it is kind of a free hit. So we'll have to see on that one.
You mentioned, James, that tough game straight off the back of the international break at home against Leeds. But the one thing you might say, now you can look at this one or two ways. Luton have three of the next four at home. Now, obviously, the pressure can build and sometimes playing at home isn't what it's necessarily cracked up to be. But if Luton are going to stay up this season, they're going to need their home form to be key. And these next three games, even though there are tough games in there against a number of sides in the top half of the table, that having three of the next four at home could be the way, if they do start to get things going, of gaining a little bit of momentum in their season.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, the one thing I think that they've got to their advantage on that front is that Kenilworth Road is such an old-fashioned, tight-knit ground that maybe players don't want to go there. It can be raucous if Luton fans get their tails up, and it can be noisy. And you know, they've made it a fortress the last two seasons in the Championship run. They went such a long time unbeaten at home. They need to kind of recapture that. I mean, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute they're going to go unbeaten to the end of the season at home, but they've got to try and make that their foundation for you know, building and getting some points on the board.
And just finally, James, are all the fans still very much behind Graham Jones, or there are small pockets of the fan base that are starting to doubt a little bit?
Yeah, it depends where you look, doesn't it? I mean, if you try and find even-tempered analysis on Twitter, for instance, then you're probably not going to find it. And that's where, you know, people tend to let off steam. And I think people on there are complaining.
Thanks very much to James for joining us this afternoon, editor of thelutonian.com. It does seem, though, that the fans are still backing Graham Jones, but they are hovering just above the relegation zone, and four straight defeats mean that they are under a bit of pressure, and obviously Luton are fighting to stay in this league, and three of the next four are at home, so that's going to be absolutely massive for Graham Jones's sides if they're going to stay up. Even though there's some tough games in there, they need to make sure that they bank on some of these games and win some of them at home.
This is Love Sport.